American distillers are breathing easier after Congress approved an extension for a tax cut that benefits their industry just days before it was set to expire. The measure was part of a larger spending bill passed last week, and it maintains a tax break for some alcohol producers first put in place as part of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. One place where that tax cut has a big impact is Kentucky. According to that state's Distillers Association, more than 20,000 people are employed directly or indirectly by the liquor industry. And in Kentucky, that, of course, means bourbon. Earlier this year, we visited Louisville for a closer look at how bourbon is made. There are more than 7 million barrels of bourbon in the state of fewer than 5 million people. Bourbon was born in Kentucky, and today the industry is in the middle of a renaissance, even as trade disputes and tariffs threaten growth. But wherever that glass of bourbon is eventually served, it all starts with a 3-foot-high white oak barrel.
What makes Kentucky stand out from all the whiskey-producing regions in the world is we alone always use a new charred barrel.
Chris Morris is master distiller at Brown-Forman, the company behind Jack Daniel's, Old Forester, Woodford Reserve, and many more liquor brands sold around the world. They do that in a cooperage, that's a barrel-making facility, in an old World War II-era factory near the Louisville airport. Until 1945, the military used this brick warehouse to manufacture rifle stocks and plywood parts for airplanes.
Yes, after the end of the war, the military supply contracts were ended, and we, Brown-Forman, purchased the plant and converted it into a barrel cooperage, and it's been making whiskey barrels ever since.
For longer than anywhere else in America.
Yes, and not only are we the oldest cooperage, but we are also the only whiskey maker who owns a cooperage making new barrels.
Chris Morris takes us inside, where dozens of workers, including one man who's been working here for 50 years, put these barrels together with their hands and machines. They have to make sure that the 33 or so staves of wood that make up the barrel fit together perfectly and can be bound by metal hoops. If there's a crack in any of the wood, the bourbon will leak out. They test that by putting water in the barrel. If there is a leak, a cooper goes to a wall of wood, finds a piece that perfectly matches the damaged stave, and replaces it. Once the barrel is perfect, it's sent across the factory floor on a series of tracks and conveyor belts to an oven where the interior of the barrel is blasted with fire to toast and char the wood. If it weren't for this process, bourbon wouldn't have its color or its flavor. That's why these barrels will have a life even after the bourbon has been consumed.
Once we've used the barrel one time only, the wood still has a long life, a potential ahead of it, and that can be realized if you ship it to Scotland or Ireland or Canada or even to other spirit-making producing regions such as Mexico or the Caribbean for rum and tequila. They use our barrels.
But it's all about the barrel.
Yes, it is. Many spirits, all spirits, I should say, leave the stills clear. And if they have any color, there's only one way it's going to get color, and that's from wood. Now, you can add a little caramel coloring to it, but that's going to be secondary. We add no color because we, again, we're Kentucky bourbon. We're 100% natural. We add nothing to our product.
Of course, something has to go into the barrel to make bourbon, and that's where distilleries come in. For that part of the process, we visited another bourbon maker called Michter's.
We'll walk inside the still room.
Andrea Wilson is Master of Maturation and Executive Vice President for Michter's, whose origins date back to the 18th century. She says whiskey starts as a mixture of grains called mash. For it to become bourbon, that mash has to be at least 51% corn. Other whiskeys usually use other grains like rye, malted barley, or wheat. Distillers boil that mash and condense the resulting vapor into what they call low wine.
Then we take that low wine, we introduce it to our pot still doubler, which is like a second refinement step or a second distillation. Gets boiled up as different compounds hit their boiling point again. They become vapor, go up to the second condenser, condense, and then they come back down, and that's what we call high wine. That's what will be evaluated for quality prior to reduction and entry into the barrel.
Then the barrels are filled with clear whiskey and hammered shut. Each barrel holds about 53 gallons of liquor and weighs about 500 pounds, so they have to be rolled along steel tracks and lifted by machines onto storehouse racks. There, they'll spend at least 5 years aging. Andrea Wilson at Michter's Distillery is also on the board of the Kentucky Distillers Association. She says 95% of the world's bourbon is made right here in Kentucky, but not all of it.
Under the U.S. law, you can produce bourbon in any of the 50 U.S. states. It was made America's native spirit in 1964. And it can be produced in any of the 50 U.S. states. But to be a Kentucky straight bourbon, you need to be produced in Kentucky.
What's the state of the industry right now? I know that the growth has been really strong over the last many years, but then, of course, along came the trade war, which has targeted bourbon specifically.
So, yeah, for Kentucky, it is a tremendous business. It's an $8.6 billion business for the state. It employs over 20,000 people. So we're very fortunate to be in an American whiskey boom. Right now, there's 7.5 million barrels of bourbon aging in Kentucky, which is the highest since 1972. So it gives you an indication of how American whiskey is going through this renaissance or essentially this growth.
Because of customers both here in the United States, but also around the world.
That's correct. And it's an amazing time for the export market. You know, trade wars are not good for anyone. No one really benefits either side. So we definitely look for the opportunity for leaders to figure out, you know, mutually beneficial outcomes that lead to a stable trade policy across the globe. And I think that's going to be incredibly important. We have seen, even last year, we saw 30% growth in our export markets.
Amid the trade war.
Amid all of that. So, you know, we do definitely feel like, you know, our product is underpinned by quality, and people are having discerning palates globally for quality, and they're willing to pay for it.
Kentucky's most famous tourist attraction is probably still the Kentucky Derby, but more people visit the state each year as bourbon tourists.
We're seeing over 1 million people now coming to Kentucky for the sole purpose of visiting the Kentucky Bourbon Trail, which is incredibly amazing. People want to learn more about Kentucky bourbon, and it's an exciting time. We just opened our Michter's Fort Nelson Distillery in downtown Louisville at 8th and Main. But what you're seeing is bourbon is really underpinning tourism. Our Louisville mayor calls it bourbonism. He coined the term. And I think it's brilliant because it really showcases how people are coming for the purpose of seeing the bourbon distilleries, but they're also experiencing hospitality culture, bars, restaurants. You know, we have this whole beautiful foodie culture as well. And it's an amazing time.
Once someone becomes a bourbon tourist, they're already interested in the drink. What many in the industry here are focused more on right now is convincing new customers around the world to give bourbon a try. Jackie Zykin is a master taster for Old Forester.
Well, I mean, there's still a lot of people that are still kind of scared to try it. I think a lot of people are still under this old umbrella of thought that it's this big cowboy juice diesel fuel product, and it's not. There's a lot of subtleties, and there's actually a lot of notes in there that if you broke down bourbon and described it by its different little palatable flavor compounds, people would be like, well, I like vanilla. Well, I like cinnamon. Well, I like butterscotch. Well, I like citrus. I like all of those things. So therefore, you technically, I guess, would enjoy a glass of bourbon because that's all there and present.
And she's just talking about plain old bourbon, not a mint julep or an old fashioned, which brings me to my last question for Andrea Wilson.
Do you think it's a shame after all the work that goes into one of these barrels when somebody makes a mixed drink with your bourbon?
I wouldn't use that terminology at all. I think what's important is that everybody's palate is different, and how you experience your bourbon is your own personal experience. I think that what I always encourage people to do is taste bourbon neat so you understand the spirit and understand what took years to develop in the barrel, and then create what you like. I mean, bartenders have done a brilliant job of supporting this industry all over the world by bringing back classic cocktails and using natural ingredients and bringing creativity and artistry to the drink.
And that's tremendously important to our business. So however you want to drink it is your choice.
How do you drink it?
I drink it neat.
There you go. See, that from the experts, neat.
Neat.
And neat it is when it goes from those barrels into bottles after years of aging. Then packed into a cardboard box. And perhaps trucked right across the street to a waiting UPS plane. Louisville is the worldwide air hub for the shipping company, after all, and then sent all over the world. I'd raise a glass now, but I'm at work. You can see pictures and video of the barrel making and distilling processes at hereandnow.org.